Welcome to
Cell Shock
Podcast.
Welcome, everyone, to episode 3 of the Cell Shock Podcast. I'm your host, Robert Piggott, a.k.a. JediFan421, and with me today I have, once again, Mr. Eric Baer, a.k.a.
Yo, what's up?
I have, once again, Miss Kelly Burke. What's up, Kelly?
3 for 3, setting the record.
And finally, we have a special guest today, Mr. Max Farinato.
I'm not that special. Kelly can tell you.
Oh, he's special.
He's a certain type of special.
He's a certain type of special.
Little self-esteem booster to open up a podcast. Not bad.
Indeed.
Yeah,
not bad. But anyway, Max, we're very grateful to have you on tonight.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Unfortunately, Mr. Zach Innes could not join us tonight
because
he is hard at work being a busy uni student right now. So
Writing fan fiction
probably as well.
I listened to him read that fan fiction on the last cast. That was really passionate.
Did you like the background music?
Yeah, exactly. I was just like, I was unsettled listening to it.
Yeah, Zach has a certain talent for writing really good stuff, but the content is like really fucked up. So it's sort of this like disconnect.
That's good.
I call it fucked up. I call it art. I think about it every day since that last podcast.
Good art unsettles you.
Abstract.
Sure.
Abstract.
Yeah. Fucking Dada shit right there. But yeah, Zach hopefully will be on the next episode, and hopefully a very special guest that I have lined up, and I don't want to say who it is, but may or may not a certain Mega 64 related person.
Oh, did the Miyamoto deal work out? Oh, what? Did I spoil it?
What the fuck, Eric? Jesus Christ. I have to get someone else. God damn it.
I'm sorry. I think I still got Kojima's number somewhere if you want that.
Well, shit. Might as well. I mean, he's not doing anything, right? So he obviously can come on the podcast.
Of course.
He's not hard at work at probably what's going to be one of the biggest games of 2013.
No. What the fuck is that guy doing? He's just rolling around in Metal Gear Solid money, and that's it. Like Scrooge McDuck.
Speaking of Scrooge McDuck, DuckTales Remastered came out. Has anyone played DuckTales Remastered yet?
Nope.
Eric?
No, but I saw Nintendo Fangirl's review of the PlayStation Store version of it, and I thought that was kind of funny, because every single comment is like, didn't you know this is on Wii U? You know this is on Wii U, right? This is on Wii U.
Oh, God, Nintendo Fangirl. How is she doing?
Horrible.
I remember when she used to call into the after shows and get berated by Sean. Oh my god, that was a great call.
I found out that she lives like 2 or 3 towns over from me. I had no idea.
And really?
She added me, and I was like, wow, you actually live really close. And she went to Kineticon, as she probably usually does. But yeah, I was like, oh, that's interesting.
Hmm. Yeah, for those who aren't in the know, Nintendo Fangirl is a semi-popular YouTube personality. I wouldn't say she's like you know, million subscribers, but she's up there, right?
Yeah, she's an ambassador and all that, or not? Yeah, what do they call them? Ambassadors, partners?
Yeah, Nintendo ambassador, I believe.
Yeah, she's one of them.
Nintendo ambassador.
Nintendo president, I don't know.
Nintendo president.
Nintendo partner, YouTube ambassador.
There you go. Those are the terminologies I'm looking for.
Yeah, totally.
I'm pretty
sure. Totally. But she does a good job covering Nintendo games and stuff like that. I don't watch a lot of her stuff, but I occasionally check out some of her videos, and it's pretty good.
I think the last video I saw from her was when she was, I think she had just gotten like 4 copies of Kid Icarus Uprising in the mail, and she was playing with a bunch of friends. That was the last thing I saw from her.
Wow, so that'd be like early 2012, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it is.
Damn.
Well, that would be the thing that Max remembers.
Of course.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Kid Icarus.
Best 3DS game?
I can't say anything. I haven't really played much of it yet.
I heard the controls suck. That's what I've heard.
You have to. It's different. It's just different. It's you can't play that game for too long holding it up. That's why they didn't include that stand. But it's a really good game. Like, I checked it out.
I can vouch for that. I played through it twice, actually. I really like it. It's one of my favorite 3DS titles.
I heard good things about Kid Icarus Uprising for the most part. I haven't played the original either, unfortunately. I heard that was pretty good.
I have played the original NES one like 7 times through.
That game is really interesting. The original is really interesting because it's harder in the beginning and then it gets easier as you go through
it. Yeah, it is super annoying. Like, I played the first stage before I beat it the first time like 20 times. And yeah, it gets super hard, but one time I just barreled it and it only takes like, it only took me like maybe like four or five hours to beat the first time, but then I played through it again because I was like, you know, that was pretty short, F it. And then, like now I could pretty much play through that game in like 2 or 3 hours.
Hmm.
So, awesome. That's what I was doing for a while, like just during airports and stuff, was like seeing if I can run through it at least once, like during this waiting period or during this flight or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely, I don't know, it seems like the 3DS is just, you know, a lot of the games on there, for the most part, are just to meant to be played in, like, short times periods, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, yeah, so Animal Crossing, I've been playing that on and off lately, and I guess to segue into what games we've been playing lately, I've been playing Animal Crossing, I've been playing also this game called Papers, Please.
Have
you guys heard of that
game?
Oh,
so good! Yeah, I played the beta. I played the beta, like, a month ago or whatever, I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I bought the full game on Steam, and I'm about 6 or 7 levels in, and I'm really having a blast so far, all things considered.
Awesome. I'm sad. I put in my name to be in it, and unfortunately, my name was not selected.
Aww.
But that's okay. He said he could only put in like 20% of the names that he received, so
he probably
it's a one out of five chance.
And I used my real name, and it wouldn't really fit that well in the setting anyway.
Yeah, because the setting is, you know, late 80s, you know, no, actually not late 80s, it's early 80s, I'm sorry, early to mid 80s, Eastern Bloc, you know, Soviet Russia type setting. And I've never actually played a video game Except for the Call of...
Sorry.
Okay, Kelly.
I couldn't resist.
Alright, yeah, I've never played a video game. This is my first video game ever. No, but...
something that's one to start out with.
Yeah, considering what it is. And it's a very heavy game. You play the role of a border, I guess... I guess border... control, or is border
patrol.
Just border patrol, I guess, guard
like
or officer.
Anti-immigration game?
It's not anti-immigration.
Inspector.
Do you reject immigration forms and such?
Yeah, actually, what you do... You
oh my god,
reject.
I just guessed.
Well, that's a very good guess, then. You're Nostradamus himself. You do actually... The majority, I think I've rejected more people in the game than I've actually allowed into the country. And You know,
hey, you got a family to feed.
Yeah, that's the really interesting thing of the game. That's what I love about it so much, is the fact that you have this family, and you're very poor in the game. Like, you have your son, your wife, your uncle, you have your in-laws, and then you have, like, medicine to buy for all of them, and then food and heat. So you have all these huge list of things you have to buy, and then to deal with that, for every person you let in, you get money. If you let them in and they aren't supposed to be let in, you get docked. You get a penalty. And after three penalties, you start losing money. And that's the big thing, is like, there are some people, when you see their papers, hear their stories, you want to let in, but they don't have the right documentation. So you have this sort of moral quandary of whether or not you should let them in or not let them in, and what are going to be the consequences of that. It's just incredibly fascinating, and most importantly, it's made, like, being a bureaucratic government official, like, almost fun in a way, and, like, challenging. And I think that's one of the, you know, the most amazing aspects of the game, is that it's made, you know, being this guy fun somehow, you know?
That's really cool. Actually, I just bought it as you were describing it.
So, Papers, Please, I definitely recommended. And Kelly, you said you were playing the beta version, right? Have you played the full version, the paid version yet?
No, I haven't. I bought Kentucky Route Zero recently and some other games, so I'm just like, oh, I kind of want to play this, but I still can't justify buying another game.
Yeah, I played Kentucky Route Zero, the first episode, most recently as well. Has anyone else played?
That game is pretty wild looking, and the way I think you guys will find something really interesting about it.
So you have played it, Max?
Yeah, I didn't finish the first episode, but it's interesting. It's dreamy. That's what I can use as a.
You know what it reminds me a little bit of? It reminds me a bit of almost like a Tim Burton-esque world. With sort of this surreal, dark imagery, and that's a bit fantastical.
Kind of.
You know?
Yeah, I see where you're coming from, definitely. It kind of does that, but it has more, like, it uses a lot more flat colors.
Yeah.
And sort of, I'm trying to think of something else that you could compare it to. I can't really. It's really cool because it's all really simple, polygonal, like set pieces, but it's so stylized that, you know, it really really works pretty well.
Yeah, definitely. I'm excited though for what's to come, because apparently it's being released in episodes, similar to Telltale's games. So,
oh, nice.
Hopefully, the third episode should be out soon.
Does that mean that they're gonna do like what they do with The Walking Dead, where you buy pretty much the season, and then when a new episode comes out, it's free?
Max, you purchased this. You should know.
I didn't really look. I was just like, all right, play. It doesn't really tell you much, actually, when you start it up. It's like, all right, start game. Yep. All right, cool. You're good.
Well, when you bought it, it says like, oh, you're buying the season pass for this item. Because you paid, like, what was it, like, well, when it was on sale, but you can't buy it piece by piece, though, right? So when you buy it, it says you're buying the season pass. Only the first only these two are available right now, but you have the rest available when they come out.
Yeah, I think there's gonna be five episodes like The Walking Dead, and I know when I bought it, I got the first two episodes. So I think you're buying all five episodes. But they're going to be released piecemeal when they come out. Same thing with The Walking Dead.
Yeah, it says right above the price, all five episodes will be automatically available upon their release.
Ah, okay. Cool.
So, yeah, they are doing the Telltale method, which is good. I think Telltale is the only, in all honesty, the only video game company that has nailed the episodic release form. Because I think Valve tried to do that with Half-Life, the Half-Life 2 episodes, if you guys remember that.
Yes.
And that sort of failed miserably because it's been, what, 5 years, 6 years since Episode 2 came out? So obviously they've abandoned that, and they're working on probably Half-Life 3 at this point, I'm going to assume.
Or maybe not.
Yeah.
Did you hear that news? One of the voice I didn't read the story, but one of the headlines I saw from, was it Kotaku or Joystick? I forgot, said that one of the voice actors said that Half-Life 3 isn't even in production as of now, but I don't know how true that is.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised, because, Valve, you know? They take their time.
I think he said sort of like he has heard, I think it went along the lines of he's heard nothing, but he doesn't know what goes on in the back rooms of, like, all those business meetings, so.
Yeah.
Just from I guess his perspective, he doesn't really hear anything. So
yeah.
there's still hope, I guess. Although it would be weird to, I mean, like, Half-Life 2 was one of the last first-person shooters of its kind. Because now, like, ever since
Call of Duty 4, you know.
Yeah, Call of Duty 4 and the way FPS, especially campaigns work. I mean, they're less. I mean, I can't think of a modern FPS nowadays that sort of sticks to the trappings of trying to figure out where to go like older ones did.
Yeah, like Duke Nukem or...
I find that I'd have to do that.
Well, even when there's an arrow telling you where to go, huh, Kelly?
Yeah, even when it... Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's like... I don't know. It's
Portal.
Portal, well, yeah. Portal's more of a puzzle game. It's not a first-person shooter.
Where do I go?
That's true. That's actually completely unique, though, I think.
Yeah.
I think that's something unto itself.
Yeah.
Although Portal 2, I thought, was a little bit easier than Portal 1, actually. I thought so, too.
And I was wondering, like, is it really, or is it just because we played an entire game that introduced us to the concepts and we know, and we're more familiar with the concept of the portal?
Yeah. I think it's that. I think it's that, Kelly.
Although, I think so too, yeah.
Although, I mean, unless you're I, Justine, I mean, you know.
Oh my gosh.
But, that's opening a whole nother can of worms. but I don't mind opening. I don't give a fuck. She's horrible at that game. I remember Mega 64. Eric, you probably remember this. They linked to the first part of her Portal 2 playthrough in their E3 2012 video, and it got so much hate that she had to, I think, private it because people were just leaving so many dislikes and negative comments. It was great.
Yeah, no, she, I mean, that's a, not just Mega 64, but, like, the entire internet, just wherever they saw it, tore it up, because, yeah, it was, like, Portal playthrough part one, and I forget how long part one was, but it was a pretty, like, lengthy part, and, like, she couldn't get past, like, the first stage or something. I didn't watch it, but, like, yeah.
Well, it wasn't that she couldn't get past the first stage, it was just, like, it seemed like she was a lot dumber than probably she actually was. Like, she was putting on this, like, dumb facade for the camera. Because I did watch it, and it just seemed like she was just intentionally acting stupid in order to, like, come across as, like, this dumb blonde bimbo. And, yeah. I don't know, I think a lot of people, including myself and Meg 64, didn't appreciate it. And then what's great is that next month they went to RTX, and iJustine was there. And they were there. And I don't know if they ran into each other or not, but if they did, it probably was really awkward.
No.
Yeah. I don't know if they've made up or not at this point. Probably not, knowing Mega 64. But
I still felt bad for her, though, because people were, like, she didn't deserve some of the things that people were saying.
No.
As anyone who leaves comments, but...
No.
I mean, like, she admitted that she's only recently gotten into video games.
Uh-huh.
And I think that... something like that can be super overwhelming for someone who's just getting into games.
Sure.
Like, no, like, regardless of your intelligence level. I remember when I had one of my professors play Portal. He wanted to play the game.
Mm-hmm.
And I sort of, like, watched him play. And, he's a smart guy, but he's not used to playing video games. And even and he had a lot of troubles, and I was, and like, I didn't know how to explain to him without giving the answer away, like, you don't do, that's not how that works. And it's kind of fascinating, actually, to see, so, like, their thought process and how it might differ from someone who's been playing games for years.
Yeah, definitely. Especially people who've been playing games since they were, like, kids, like most of us have.
Yeah. I still have my moments, though. My iJustine moments. That's what I'll call this.
Your iJustine moments.
like the boulder in Resident Evil, Max.
Oh, man. Yeah, I didn't realize that you thought I was kidding. Because... okay, so I guess we should have either of you played...
Yeah, a little context would be nice for the viewers.
So, have either of you played the Resident Evil remake?
The one for the GameCube?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. So...
Eric, have you played it?
I've never played a Resident Evil game.
Oh, wow. Really?
Confession. Sorry.
It's okay.
That knocks some people backward.
No, this was... I mean, Kelly, this was... I mean, not definitely the first time you played Resident Evil, but this was your first, like, playthrough of a whole Resident Evil game.
Yeah, my first Resident Evil game.
Yeah, and to be fair to Eric, I have played Resident Evil, the remake, I've played Resident Evil 4, I've played Resident Evil 5, and I have never beaten a Resident Evil game, but I have played them. And from what I've played, I've enjoyed for the most part, so there you go.
Well, so I'm sure you're all familiar, well, all familiar with tank controls in a lot of older 3D games. Mm-hmm. So, you know,
it wasn't the tank controls though. I feel like it wasn't the controls that was screwing me up.
Was it the perspective?
No, I literally thought that I had to go that way.
Oh, you mean away from?
Well, anyway, tell the story.
Okay, all right. So there's a part where you're in these caves and you have to. You go up to this, like, boulder that's sort of blocking your path, and when you realize you can't go that way, you walk back, and it starts to basically chase you, and you have to dodge into a corner to evade the boulder. Now, that happens again, except the boulder's down the hallway, and you have to go towards where the boulder is, and the boulder starts coming at you as you're going forward, because there is a path on, like, your left side that you have to duck into before the boulder can reach you. So I kept telling Kelly, oh, you have to keep going forward towards the boulder, and the path you have to go on is on your left. And but you kept getting killed by that part.
I kept turning around every single time and running away from it.
Okay.
Because I thought by forward you meant after I turned around I have to keep running. But I'm like, but the boulder gets me every single time. I'm not fast enough. But the funny part is the boulder before that, I avoided it on the first try.
Mm-hmm. First try.
Remember Max?
I was just like, holy crap, I died three times there the first time, so.
But the second boulder, I did not see that. Did not see that that little alcove.
So
I kept turning around, and I swear I thought that I had to go back to the entrance from which I came, and I every single time kept missing it and kept doing the same exact thing, even though I knew it wouldn't work. I was like, well, maybe this time I'll be fast enough. Maybe I'm not holding down this sprint button. Where's the sprint button?
Yeah. Yeah, I think there's a similar thing in Resident Evil 4.
Yes, there is.
Where you have to dodge a couple of boulders a couple of different times. And there's always, you're pressing like one of the buttons, and at the very last second, you have to press two buttons. And I remember I died once because I just wasn't... I was like 11, 12 years old, and my reflexes just weren't fast enough. But I think after the first time I died, I never... died again, so... But those boulder parts were intense.
I just want to stress that it was not the controls. There's no problem with the controls. I've used tank controls dodging boulders many a time in Tomb Raider. I was running the wrong way.
Just run the wrong way, Kelly Burke.
How, like, if you see a boulder, your instinct is to turn around, right, and run, not run towards it.
No, I mean, my instinct is I just want to embrace that boulder, you know, obviously. I mean, who wouldn't want to get crushed
Kelly
by a boulder?
Kelly is a bigger Raiders of the Lost Crusade fan than you are.
Yeah, exactly.
Did you just say Raiders of the Lost Crusade?
Yeah.
Hey, do you call yourself a movie buff?
I never said that.
Hey, you watch a shit ton of movies.
I do, but I never said I was a movie buff.
That doesn't make you a movie buff, you watch a shit ton of movies. Mm-hmm.
Did Indiana Jones ever run towards Boulder? I don't even know.
That was in the first cut of the movie that nobody ever saw. And he was just like, come on, I can take this shit. And then he died, and then that was it. That was the end of the movie. And they realized this is not...
Having a protagonist die in the first 5 minutes of the movie doesn't bode well for a lighthearted action adventure film.
No.
Maybe if it was like a horror film. But,
really funny horror film.
Yeah. But speaking of horror and actually Resident Evil type games, I think actually this is going to sound really weird, but. I just started playing this game today called Gone Home. Has any of you guys heard of it?
I downloaded it today, and I started playing it, and I'm so impressed by the atmosphere of that game.
Yeah, yeah. Kelly and Eric, have you heard of this game, Gone
Home? Yeah, I've seen gameplay of it, but I haven't played it myself.
Nope.
Well, for anyone who's not familiar, Gone Home is basically a game where you play as this girl who's come back from a long trip in Paris, and she comes home and she gets a note from her sister that her sister's gone, and she doesn't know why her sister's gone, and basically the whole game is you figuring out what happened to your parents and your sister. And I gotta admit, it's for someone who's like not a fan of like maybe games like Myst or something like that. And this game definitely feels a little bit like Myst. I don't know if you guys are familiar with it. It's like...
Oh, yeah.
A very popular point-and-click adventure type game. You walk around, you solve puzzles, stuff like that. And this game reminds me a little bit like Myst, but, you know, it's so, like... I don't know. For some reason, every, like... door I open, and I think it's just because the atmosphere is just so creepy. You have the rain, and occasionally you get claps of thunder and lightning. Every door I open, every corridor I go down, is like so creepy.
Yeah.
And that's like my type of horror, like psychological type horror, you know, where I feel like there's going to be a jump scare like any second, and then there's not. Because it's not a horror game, but the atmosphere is just so chilling, it feels like one.
I agree, yeah. Like, I was scared. Like, I was playing this morning, and actually, really any room, you know, none of the lights are on, and you know there's a light switch nearby, and I'm just like, oh, God, here we go. And I'm like, why do I feel so tense about this, even though I know from the outset this isn't supposed to be a horror game at all. It's interesting.
Yeah, it's very interesting. It's, I think also just... I don't know. It does a lot of things, you know, that you don't really see a lot in today's modern games. It, it's just very sort of, it's not linear at all. You can go any room you want in the house. You can start on the ground floor. You can go upstairs. All you have to do is just get into the house and, you know, it's just all about exploring. It's a little bit like you talked about, Max. It's a bit more... free form, you know, there's no one set path, and it's just, you're just exploring the house and finding it out, what happened to your family, and it's just really, really interesting, and that's another game that I'd really recommend to people check out if they want to play something different. I think that it's on sale right now, if you buy it from the main website, for like $18, normally it runs for like $20, so, yeah, definitely check it out.
Check it out.
But, yeah, so those are the games I've been playing. And I guess, Eric, have you been playing any games lately?
Still Phoenix Wright HD, which I think I mentioned on the last podcast already.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm poor, so I've been playing a lot of demos.
Uh-huh.
So I actually played the demo for Mario and Luigi Dream Team,
mm-hmm.
which was really good, a lot better than I thought it would be. I was going to wait a while to get that game, but after playing the Dream Team demo, I think that's definitely been bumped up on my priority list, because that, I feel like that game is what they had in mind when they came up with the Year of Luigi. Like, that game is just bursting with Luigi's, like, everywhere. You turn it on, the first 2 seconds, if you have it on 3D, it's just Luigi's flying out of the screen. It's, mm-hmm. it's nuts.
I really like that team. It was Alpha Dream that makes those games. Like, they made the other Superstar games for Game Boy Advance and DS, and
yeah.
those are very, very good. So, good to see there. Apparently, I guess the director for that those games, I mean, he worked on Super Mario RPG, so you get a lot of hints of that, for sure.
Yeah, I've actually, in terms of, like, the Mario RPG games, I've only ever played Seven Stars, the first one for Super Nintendo, and I've only ever played Bowser's Inside Story. I never played Superstar Saga or Partners in Time.
Uh-huh.
Need to get on those, but yeah, no. But Dream Team was very similar in terms of Bowser's Inside Story, and I thought it was going to be too similar, like, oh, you have the real world, and then you have, like, you go inside this place and you have 2D mechanics, but I thought that they did a really good job, because the demo comes with, real world level, one dream world level, and then one real world boss fight and one dream world boss fight. And I thought they did a really good job at making the dream world levels a lot different than, like, the inside Bowser's body levels in that game. Like, it was just, like, you have, like, just all these, like, crazy moves, like, that you can use with Luigi you can't use anywhere else. And, like, it's pretty much, like, you only play with, you only play with Mario when it comes to, like, boss battles and, like, enemy battles, but, like, you can use, like, Luiginary moves, it's called, and it's, like, different things you can do with, like, an army of Luigis that you have. It's just crazy. It's, like, unlike anything I've seen in, like, a Mario game before.
Sweet.
Yeah. So that's been good. So I played that, and I also played the demo for the Wonderful 101 that came on Wii U, and that was fun. I think I'm finally sold on that game after I watched the, Nintendo hosted a Nintendo Direct specifically geared around the Wonderful 101.
Oh,
and,
good.
I thought that was really good because everyone I know has been excited and amped for that game, and I just don't get it because I watch the trailers and it looks crazy and fun, but I don't have any idea. Every time I've watched the trailer, and no one has ever really explained it to me, so I never knew what you did in the game. So it's hard for me to be excited when I don't know what you do in it.
The director was actually worried that Nintendo wasn't advertising that game enough, so I'm glad they actually finally went out of their way to, you know, say, oh, yeah, this is our game. You know, it's coming out.
Yeah, no, they made a 20-minute-long Nintendo Direct geared based on the Wonderful 101 that you can watch on the YouTube channel right now. And,
awesome.
It just goes right into detail about, like, how you do each type of, like, pretty much, like, what the game consists of, how it's laid out, like, how you exactly incorporate using, like, 100 heroes at once, and, like, how you use them, like, how you execute moves, what kind of battles you'll be doing. And after that, I felt finally, like, sold on the game. I was like, all right, this is how I needed the game explained to me all along. I just not, like, crazy superheroes. Crazy, foul, flashy, cartoony superheroes in 2 minutes is not going to sell me on a trailer. Like, you need to show me, like, what I'm going to be doing. And that finally, like, did it. So, I finally felt sold on it. But then I played the demo, and they don't really explain much to you in the demo. Like, they tell you simply, like, what the buttons do, but they don't tell you, like, how exactly you pull off combos or how you, like, what exactly you need to be doing. The demo's a little vaguer than I would have liked it to be, but I thought it was still fun. I only had, to be honest, like, I had only had, like, about half an idea of what I was doing at all times during the demo, but I thought it was still fun. So it's not, like, I wouldn't call it, like, a must-have Wii U game, but it's definitely, in comparison to everything else coming out for the system, it's definitely one of the more impressive titles that is lined up. And, that's definitely one I could see myself getting, not day one launch or anything, but somewhere down the line I could see myself definitely picking that up.
Yeah, there's been a lot of Wii U games coming out lately. Wonderful 101 is coming out soon. Pikmin 3 just came out recently.
Yeah. Nintendo's new approach to their release schedule, I think, is really good. They're aiming to have one big Wii U title come out each month until the end of the year. So August, it was Pikmin 3. September is Wonderful 101. October is Wind Waker. November is DK Tropical Freeze. And December is Super Mario World 3D. So.
Oh, wow. That's coming out this year?
Yep.
Wow.
Makes sense. I mean, they need to have a Mario
really
game out
it.
Every year. Yeah, they do. They absolutely need it. I mean, considering that their big game for the Wii U, which is going to be Smash Brothers, obviously, is not coming out until next year, so...
Yeah, next year is, like, Mario Kart and Smash Bros.
Yeah, and they'll probably announce the next, like, big Mario 3D, like the successor to Galaxy 2 next year.
I feel like that's what they had in mind when they made 3D.
Really?
You think so? Yeah, I was wondering about that, too. I was like, you know, this looks really cool, but I'm like... It still feels like it's. I mean, it could. It looks good enough to be a core game for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think it looks fine. I never gave it crap about co-op, so I was a little disappointed that it was just a Mario game that's really focusing on the co-op this time. But, and I think it looks fine. I really like Mario 3D Land for the DS, so it's great that that's getting a sequel and that'll be really similar to that. But at the same time, I feel like it just doesn't take the next step like the Mario Galaxy games did, you know?
No, yeah, definitely. Definitely.
That's the thing.
Those games, I feel like, went above and beyond and, like, really... I feel like they put so much, like, care and, like, love into that game in terms of, like, making it, like, the next big thing for Mario that, like... I was definitely saying before E3 when they were like, we're going to be announcing the new 3D Mario game, so, yeah, hold on to your seats. I was like, what are they going to announce? Like, Galaxy, I just feel like, went so above and beyond. Like, putting Mario into space, like, where do you go after that? I don't know. And then, yeah, I felt like that was, like, almost like a downgrade in terms of, like, the next evolution of that specific line of Mario games, but just as a standalone Mario, I'm excited for it, but I just wish they would have gone a little bit bigger.
Yeah, definitely. Me too. I think a lot of people do, because I think Galaxy 2 came out 2010, right? 2009.
Yeah. I love Galaxy 2. I actually 100% of Galaxy 2. I got all 242 stars in that game. I was so invested in it.
Yeah.
Nice.
It's a great game, yeah. I think both Galaxy games are great. But to be perfectly honest, I'm more excited for the next 3D, or I guess maybe 2D Mario RPG that's on, like, a main system. Because to be perfectly honest, the Paper Mario games are my favorite, like, Mario series. That's not, like, the main series.
When was the last time they made a 3D Mario RPG?
Super Paper Mario came out on the Wii in 2006 or 2007.
It feels so long ago. Are they still going to continue that?
They put out Sticker Star for the 3DS.
Yeah. But that
did okay.
I think.
It did okay.
I feel like when it came out, a lot of people were like, oh, this is all right, this is not bad, but the more time went on, the more people would be like, yeah, I'm over this, like, this is what I wanted.
I mean, I didn't pick it up or play it because it doesn't look like a Paper Mario. It just looks like Paper Mario with the name, and they decided to throw these weird, stupid mechanics of you use, like, stickers to battle, and you only get a certain number of stickers for certain attacks, and it's really weird.
There's no partners either. I played through the whole game, and I was actually surprised at how short it was. Like, one of my favorite games is Thousand Year Door.
Me too.
And, that game is... Oh, man, I'm going to play that again soon.
Wait, you were surprised at how short Sticker Star was?
Yeah, Sticker Star was incredibly short. I was actually surprised when I beat it. I was just like, wow. Because they bring it back to the same RPG mechanics of the first two Paper Mario games. But you have no partners, and you know, all your moves are stuck to these stickers. And while there's a slightly addictive element to picking up the stickers, and the worlds definitely had their cool paper touches to them. It wasn't as fleshed out as I think it could have been.
As the last three games had been.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I was just surprised that you said it was too short, because I honestly don't know. I know a lot of people that picked that up and started playing it, but I don't know anyone who finished it. Everyone I talked to has been like, oh yeah, I stopped around this point or this point. I don't know anyone who's beat it. So that's why I was kind of surprised by that.
Yeah, I mean, that's what this, seriously, though, that's what I'm waiting for. I'm waiting for a sequel to Super Paper Mario for the Wii U. I think that's when I will pick up the Wii U, but I don't know if that's ever going to happen, unfortunately. Kelly, have you played any of the Paper Mario games?
No, I haven't, sadly. Okay. I haven't played many Mario games, period.
Whoa.
I'm sorry. That's my, yeah, that's my
obsession. You got me back.
Your video game history is really unique, for sure, because... Yeah, I know. It's just because you started earlier, on something earlier than probably most of us ever have, and then you came back a little later. Hmm. Right?
Yeah, you really like to bring this up, and I don't understand.
I know.
Your fascination.
No, it is fascinating, because you can talk to anybody... in our generation, they'll be like, oh yeah, I start on a Nintendo, or you know, maybe an Atari.
PlayStation.
But you started on Intellivision.
Really?
And then stopped for a while, and then came back on PlayStation.
Well, yeah, well, as far as ownership goes, it was Intellivision, then Game Boy Color, and then PlayStation. That's what I grew up on.
Oh,
so
very nice.
I mean, I played the original, I played the, do you remember the Super Mario Brothers Deluxe that came out for the Game Boy Color?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is pretty much the only, I think the only Mario game that I've beaten.
Wow. That's such an obscure one.
Damn.
Is it? Well, it's basically the original, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it is, but that's definitely not one I mean, in terms, specifically Super Mario Bros. Deluxe, I just never think about it until, unless someone mentions it to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, in terms of beating Mario games, that my list is definitely limited, but I mean, I've played so many of them.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I played, here at a friend's houses or part, yeah. I have Mario Kart, does that count?
Of course.
Oh, yeah.
I wouldn't say it's a Mario game, but the... I feel like that's totally different. That's a kart racing game. That's like not
sure.
Yeah,
but I mean,
I don't count that.
It's so expansive. It's just I guess I don't. I've just never opted for a Nintendo console, home console. But I've loved their handhelds. So I'm
Kelly, I didn't know Nintendo did counseling at home.
Counseling.
Does Dr. Mario come to your house and
throw big fucking pills in your face?
You guys think they're going to bring back Dr. Mario in the new Smash Bros?
I mean, why not? They bring him back Luigi, which for some reason they had to
confirm. He's been in everyone. Dr. Mario was only in Melee, and then he was in Brawl.
Now, you know what? They have to put in Paper Mario. This is I wanted him...
He'd be great. Yeah, he'd be great as a secret character. You don't find out about him unless you get a certain achievement or whatever.
Because he could be so different from Mario in every way.
Oh, definitely.
They could make him his own thing.
Like made out of paper.
I mean,
exactly.
Yeah, exactly. They could do. You can have different paper finishers and all that. That'd be really cool. But I don't know. I mean, for God's sake, they're putting in the Wii Fit Trainer woman, and they're putting in the Animal Crossing.
Yeah, actually, this is a pretty classic. This is a pretty classic topic. I don't know if you brought up on your podcast yet, but who do you guys want in the new Smash Bros?
Oh yeah, I mean,
everyone's got their own little.
Everyone's got their own little things they want. Max, you want Paper Mario?
For sure.
I have the most valuable. Valuable.
Okay. Oh, valuable. Oh. Stand back.
I don't care.
What character would you enjoy though playing?
Well,
if it wasn't the
vast amount of Nintendo games I have under my belt, come back to me.
Okay, Eric, what about you?
Well, since Namco is
Phoenix Wright.
Phoenix Wright? Hey, I wouldn't be surprised.
Hey, after seeing how he did in Marvel vs. Capcom 3, I know a lot of people who like him and use him a lot. So yeah, maybe that's a possibility. Yeah, there's definitely potential in there ever since that. For me, Namco is producing it, developing it, something like that. They have a big hand in this next game. So my realistic answer is Dig Dug.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Like, classic Namco character, I would love to see Dig Dug.
Yeah.
Unrealistic answer, Goku. Because Namco Bandai did produce like all the Tenkaichi series, the Dragon Ball Z Tenkaichi series, and they produced like a few other titles as well. So they definitely have a good hand in the rights to like Dragon Ball Z characters. So man, that's like my ultimate dream is just to see them do the impossible and get him over to that game. That's unrealistic answer. I know it's like 99% chance never going to happen, but
it would be hilarious to see.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I mean, Goku or Dig Dug.
I have an answer. How about Cooking Mama? I think Cooking Mama should be.
Wow, actually, yeah, because that. I mean, I know Majesco makes those games, but is she pretty much like only been on Nintendo platforms?
I think so.
As far as like my.
Yeah, I've only ever played those games on like DS and Wii.
They could. I would actually. That would be kind of cool.
Is she not in Brawl at all?
No.
Cooking Mama has never been a part of Smash Bros.
Well, it's time to change that.
Oh,
she. What is it? What would her attacks be, Kelly?
Well, she could get that. I know what her super could be. Well, oh no, because then she'll be like Kirby. I guess would she get that fire in her eyes, and then like. It's a good question.
How about she just pours hot oil on somebody and it's really graphic? And yeah, exactly.
That's her super, yeah. Because Mr. Game & Watch, technically, he uses a frying pan. So I don't know if Cooking Mama would use a frying pan or...
Lord.
Indeed. She would have to use, like, a bowl or something.
She uses from the babysitting game.
She's just a baby.
Throws babies.
Oh Jesus!
Did you say yours, Rob?
No. I'll start with unrealistic. Unrealistic. I'd love to see Sniper Fox from the Metal Gear series.
It's Sniper Wolf.
Sniper Wolf. Jesus Christ! No, there you go. That's how much I know about the series, but. Yeah, Sniper Wolf.
In terms of like Metal Gear characters, I feel like that's like an interesting choice. Why do you say that?
Sniper Wolf, because I just feel like does anyone else? I think the only person that in Smash Brothers that has a gun is Fox, right? And he uses a laser pistol.
Off the top of my head,
Samus has a gun.
Samus has her blaster. But I think Sniper Wolf would be the only character who would have, like, a sniper. An actual real-life gun, a laser weapon.
When they were doing Brawl, they said, we didn't want to give Snake any guns because just guns might be too mature a thing for the type of game that Smash is or something.
Sure, sure.
So that's why they gave him explosives so that they probably wouldn't that would be cool, but I could see that'd be funny actually.
Yeah, even if she's just like a one off like type character in like, you know, the Smash Brothers games. Just having her like if Snake was in the game and like she came in, you know, that could be interesting. But I guess realistic answer I like that character a lot. She's one of my favorite characters in the Metal Gear series.
I really liked your part in the first game.
I have to say, realistic, probably, was Waluigi in any of the Smash games?
He was an assist trophy in Brawl.
Okay.
Like, if you broke him open, he'd take out his tennis racket, because Mario Tennis was the first game he was in.
Yeah, I'd like to see Waluigi in the game as an actual character, only because I'd want to hit the shit out of Luigi or Mario, or just anyone with a tennis racket. He just, that's his main thing, is just he has a tennis racket and he just hits the shit out of people with it.
He was super aggressive with that in Brawl. Super, super aggressive.
True.
So, yeah.
Yeah, so that there you go. Those are my choices.
I'm just, alright, thank you all for none of you having said the me. Because people have said that, and I think that's the worst idea in the world.
That's awful.
Wait, what?
What?
Wait, what?
there are people out there. I feel like I've read this multiple times across just different comments on Smash Bros. Things that people want the Mii, like you be able to play as your Mii in the thing. And I'm just like, are you cracked? Like, what? What would you do? Like, that's like the most boring thing you could put in that game. Have you guys seen that petition going around online for people?
For Reggie, yeah, people want Reggie in the game because he talked about it in one interview with Jeff Keighley.
Yeah.
It's all, of course, it's with an interview with Jeff Keighley. And we talked,
His only response is, you gotta take it up with Sakurai. You gotta take it up with Sakurai.
Yeah, gotta take it up with Mr. Sakurai.
And Sakurai's like, who the fuck is Reggie?
He's in Animal Crossing.
Oh, he is?
Yeah, he shows off his house and everything in like one of the promotional videos.
Oh, shoot.
You can go there.
Yeah. I went there a couple times.
I went there and I was like, oh, okay. The poster of it, you can get a poster of him, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those
I believe
big eyes.
So. Huh. But, yeah, Reggie, number one Smash Brothers character. I'm going to change my answer right there. I want to see Reggie in the game now. Reggie, and then Jeff Keighley as, like, an unlockable character. So you can do Jeff Keighley versus Reggie in Smash.
His final Smash is a really intense interview between each other. And it's like, whoa, holy shit, and everybody gets blown away. It's just way too much.
I was just about to ask, because I'm not opposed to Reggie. If they announced it, hey, I'd laugh forever and I'd be down with it, but what moves would you guys want to have? Like, what would he do?
They'd have to have something involved with, like, his body is ready or something like that, I'm sure.
Or some Pizza Hut.
Or Pizza Hut, yeah. But they probably wouldn't get the rights to that, so just be generic pizza. I wonder how they would stylize Reggie, though. Would they have him look like a Mii, like an Animal Crossing villager, or would it be, like,
realistic?
That's
what I was thinking, like a Mii. Like, I couldn't see
that. Photorealistic. The,
like, photorealistic would be, I feel like, would be so out of place. Like, I feel like
it'd be hilarious, though. As someone has no investment in this, it'd be so funny.
Photorealistic. Photorealistic Reggie fighting against, like, the super cartoonish Mario and Luigi. It'd be fucking great.
Like Mortal Kombat stands.
Exactly.
Well, that would be so good if they just did, like, they had the 3D model of Reggie. It was actually, they just had Reggie in front of a green screen. And that's what they did from Mortal Kombat,
yeah.
That'd be fantastic.
That'd be great. You know, we're talking about having, like, 3D models against, like, cartoonish, like, sprites. I don't know if you guys have heard of this, this website called saltybet.com. Erica,
yes,
you know about it.
I was going to bring this up.
Okay. Now, Kelly, before you bring it up, I just want to say, first of all, I am not a gambler at all, but I had a really fun time with, like, with this website. Because I forget, what is the name of the actual battles? I know there's a name for it, right?
Oh, like the system?
The system, yeah.
Mugen.
Okay. It's Mugen, okay.
Mugen or Mugen,
Mugen. Okay. Because
I think it's Mugen because Mugen means.
Well, it's spelled it's like the initials M U G E N, but I say Mugen because I don't know.
Infinity. That's what it means. So infinite characters, infinite Dragon Ball Z Super Saiyan 5 Vegeta.
Yeah.
Does Mugen stand for something? Because or is it just written that way to be funny?
I'm not sure.
Maybe both. Who knows? But, it's really fun. It's a Salty Bet, which is the website associated with it, is really fun. And we were talking about, like, 3D models before and how they, like, unrealistically would fight against, like, sprites. At one point, I think this was, like, a couple nights ago, Zinedine Zidane, do you guys know who that is?
He's the guy who headbutt that person.
At the World Cup. Yeah, he's the French soccer player who got kicked out of the World Cup finals because he headbutted someone. He's a sprite, like, in Salty Bet, in Mugen. And he fought against this, like, anime robot. And so the anime robot is a normal sprite, and Zidane is just this... he looks like a cardboard cutout. It's just a flat 2D, like, photo of him, like, the guy scanned it in from, like, a Google image photo, and it's just, he walks and fights so awkwardly, it's fucking hilarious. One of the matchups was Cloud from Final Fantasy VII versus Fat Albert.
Somebody did a Fat Albert sprite.
Like, yeah, apparently someone did a Fat Albert sprite. So he's not like, and it's not like the Kenan Thompson version from the movie. It's just the cartoon 60s version of Fat Albert. And then it's Cloud with his huge, like, Buster sword. And he just goes around and he starts just swinging his sword and just stabbing Fat Albert in the stomach. And it's just a totally one-sided fight. And it's fucking hilarious.
I need to see this.
Oh, my God. It's great. Although, to be fair, it can be very addicting if you have a gambling personality. Like, I know people who are, like, addicted to Salty Bae.
Oh, man.
It's very addicting. I think for a lot of people that can maybe turn them off. Like, Eric, I know you've sort of said before that you aren't a big fan of Salty Bae.
Yeah, I don't know. I think the cool idea is cool. Like, apparently, like, the guy who's running this, like, has, like, I don't know, what is it, like hundreds of thousands of just fictional characters in the system or something? And hey, I think that's cool to try to make like the Mugen with like the just the widest character selection you can imagine and like have just the most random ass battles happen. I think that's cool, but like I just don't get the whole like betting with Monopoly money shit. Like, like it just seems like to me that seems like a waste of time and like unless you need like therapy for like your gambling addiction, like I don't know what the point is.
Yeah, sure. Basically.
You could look at it that way. That would actually be kind of interesting.
Sure.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's like
I could totally see that being used as like a legit like therapeutic thing for like people with gambling problems. But otherwise, I have no idea like what the appeal of like betting monopoly is.
Oh yeah, definitely. It is. Yeah, it's certainly interesting. How just that whole thing is like, I don't know, just set up because they have, on the one hand, you can just go in for free as just a normal user, and then there's another thing, you can join the site and like pay like $5 or something, and you become like an Illuminati member, and like you can look up stats and stuff like that for all the characters and like wins and losses and stuff like that, and see which character to bet money on and stuff, so. It's definitely, I can definitely see it as, like, a therapeutic type thing for, like, recovering gambling addicts.
Yeah.
But, yeah, Salty Bae, it's very interesting. I'd say take a look if you just, even if you just want to see random-ass fictional characters fight. Like, I think at one point, there was a fight between, Superman and this, like, really, like, small anime girl. And Superman gets the shit kicked out of him. And it's fucking hilarious. It's just like every like DC character, and I think almost every like Dragon Ball Z character is like underpowered on that game. which is interesting.
Yeah, that's the other thing I have against that game. Apparently like all the Dragon Ball Z characters are underpowered and I don't support this. I heard that the only time I ever heard of a Dragon Ball Z character winning a fight was Yamcha won against like someone who was really strong, and someone just messaged me while they were watching the fight going, Yamcha is too overpowered in this, and I'm like, you're the first person to ever say that in the entire universe.
Yeah, I think Yamcha's won, and Bulma won, I think, one match.
No, I didn't even know really, I had Bulma.
Yeah, Bulma's in, and she won one match against, like, there's like huge odds against her, and she won, and Super Saiyan Vegeta, Majin Vegeta won like one match too, so it was like, yeah, I don't know. I don't know why the Dragon Ball Z characters are underpowered, or like most of the DC characters are underpowered, but I think that's just the AI. It's weird.
Or maybe they're trying to be ironic or something.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's Salty Bae. Very interesting website. But yeah, so Kelly,
yes.
You talked briefly about, you were talking about, you were playing Papers, Please. What other games have you been playing lately?
Well, let's see. I recently finished Tomb Raider, Max and I both, actually.
That's right.
We've written extensively about it, so that's been fun.
We'll definitely shoot a link to those, articles.
Yeah. The last one, the fourth one, has spoilers in it, so keep that in mind. But
I mean, the game's been out since, like, March, right?
Yeah.
March.
Just in case, you know. I feel like it's still polite to give a heads up. And I don't know what to say. I mean, I mentioned it last time, I think, that I'd only played a few hours at that point. But I was super relieved when, like, that a specific moment in that game, or like, when things started to change, because, I like, past Tomb Raiders have always had supernatural elements in them, and I don't consider this a spoiler because I feel like this, if anything, this will encourage people to play. But there is, the game is very similar to Lost, and it also, like Lost, it has a lot of weird sort of stuff happening. You're not sure why it's happening, but it's clear, it's pretty clear that, hey, this, like, there's something deeper here, that, like, some sort of supernatural stuff is the cause of all this. So I was afraid, and I guess because of so much emphasis on the action and the combat against all the dudes, that I thought that in this game they were going to push for super realism. Just, okay, she gets stranded on an island and she has to kill all these men, and that's how she becomes strong. But I feel like, I didn't realize that the island she lands on is actually is a ancient civilization, and you don't even really realize that at the beginning of the game. And but it more and more stuff opens up to you, and I was really impressed, and I felt like, well, I know I did not see any of that in any trailers. Before, like, I'm sure if you get, like, guys, what you've seen just through osmosis alone has not really revealed any of that stuff for the most part. Or if it was so quick and fast. It was just like, well, this is a second thought. Yeah, there's like stuff you can dig up, and there's like these side tombs, but yeah, there's some cool stuff that it's like, I don't want to be too specific because, you know, they'll definitely take away some of the magic. But Max, do you agree for the most part?
Yeah. And, I mean, it's really fun. And mechanically, like, I bring this up probably every time I would talk with Kelly about it, but, the way you control Lara, like, the controls are so snappy and tight, and you know how...
Yeah, I don't care about that.
Well, I care about games, so...
Oh, shit.
Anyway,
Burn! Ouch!
So you know how in, like, certain games, you know, really any 2D or 3D platformers, some games... you have to really commit to a jump. Like, when you start going in a direction, there's no, like, going back. Like, I'm trying to think of an example. Actually, I feel like that's the case in Uncharted sometimes. Like, once
you
commit to a jump. Or even older Castlevania games. But in this game, they give you a little bit of leeway. Like, mid jump, you can sort of shift the direction just a little bit. Mm-hmm. And it's just enough to make... Really? It makes getting around, like say if you, like, realize at the last moment you fucked up, it's they give you a chance to sort of correct yourself.
I never tried moving midair.
Oh, dude, try it. It's a whole new
world.
Well,
I finished the game, and so...
Start a new file and just do it. You know, you gotta do it.
I feel like she auto-corrects herself. Like, almost to the point where I'm just like, wow, that was extremely fair. Like, I'll take a jump super lazily, and she'll, like, twist, like, midair, and, like, suddenly teleport a foot to the left and grab the ledge. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. It must be the mysticism of the island that is pushing her along.
You're probably right. That's how they get away with all this.
I think, you know... This new Tomb Raider game is definitely going to set off, you know, probably a much better series of games than the last three or four Tomb Raider games before it have.
I agree, but there's some people who will disagree, and that's fine. This game is, the plot is so similar to Lost's.
Yeah.
It's almost, like, laughable. Like, it's really funny. It's like Lost, but without, like, the super long character backgrounds and these touching character moments, you know, which I really liked about Lost, but Tomb Raider is like this condensed, like, plot of Lost, you know, like, I won't get into too many details, but just the fact that a mysterious storm shipwrecks these people, mm-hmm. and there's strange other people that are there,
yeah,
and you're killing each other, and,
is there a giant polar bear in the new Tomb Raider?
Actually, funny you mention that, because there's no but there are other things that are just like, what? And I'm sure there's things that you see and they never, like, mention again, kind of like Lost. And there's, you know, these mysterious storms and things happening, and you can't leave. All these things holding you back, and yeah, there's a hat, like, in the first part, like, within the first half hour, she goes down a hatch. Like, it's...
Oh, yeah. Like,
yeah, right?
That's right.
She opens a hatch and she goes down it.
Interesting. Very interesting.
And there is stuff there. Just like there was stuff.
Yeah, there's stuff.
Yeah,
stuff.
Stuff. Just stuff.
Both Tomb Raider and Lost have a lot of stuff.
Say a lot of games have a lot of stuff in them. But yeah, so it sounds like you definitely recommend Tomb Raider.
Yeah, definitely. Whether it's your first one or if you've played many, I would definitely give it a shot.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
And that's mostly it,
mm-hmm.
for now. Yeah.
Cool. Very cool. So thank you, Kelly. Max, my friend, what have you been up to in terms of video games? What have you been playing lately besides Gone Home, which we talked about earlier?
Animal Crossing, like every day, when I wake up, I'll play an hour and see how everybody's doing in my town, and then when I come back in the evening, I'll go to the little tropical island, and thank you, Kelly, for telling me about going to the island at night. Because I'm making about, like, almost 300,000 bells a night.
Damn.
Just hunting these beetles. I was, yep. just like, holy shit, these sell for a lot.
I just finished my McMansion. It's expanded to its maximum.
Sure.
Really?
Your McMansion?
Oh, you ever heard, yeah, I said that, didn't I? Have you ever heard that term before?
No.
Oh, really?
I've heard of that term before.
Good. No, it's not a racial thing.
But it can be if you want it to be.
It sounded like you had a mansion that was devoted to, like, a McDonald's or something.
Okay, then that's exactly what it... Okay, good. I was worried that you thought something else. No, that's exactly where it comes from. It's a pejorative, like, uh-huh. your home is so big, it's like, you know, but
you have a lot of them popping up all over the place, and they all look the same, and
mm-hmm.
and they're unnecessary. It has a connotation that it's unnecessarily large.
Uh-huh.
Like, you don't need that, and it's just a waste. So
yeah.
that's what that means. Yeah.
Well, it definitely sounds. Yeah, like you're having a lot of fun in Animal Crossing, and...
Sorry, Max, continue.
No, that's okay. So doing that, playing some Shimigami Tensei 4, which is really good. That's a very good game.
Yeah,
I don't know what else to say about it, unless you guys like RPGs and...
I've heard some people say some not too stellar things about it.
Oh, really?
I've read some of the reviews for it. I know about the series. But I guess, I don't know. I know that, like, I think the third game, I heard there's a certain part, if you don't do certain things, you don't actually fight the final boss or something. He tells you, like, to go fuck yourself.
Really?
Or something.
Oh. I was actually in the middle of playing Nocturne, which is the third one, and I want to beat that one, too. I'm really curious. Do you, anything specific about what certain people said about 4 that they didn't like?
I think just the pacing and... Yeah, and the maybe repetitive is it repetitive?
It's a you know JRPG. I mean,
I don't think Persona's repetitive.
Well, actually, you'd probably that's the thing. That's what I can't take people who say repetitive seriously because everybody's definition of repetitive is what's the word?
Repetitive?
Subjective.
It's subjective, thank you.
That's
I mean,
true.
If you liked, honestly, Kelly, because you like Persona 4, I would recommend Shin Megami Tensei 4 to you, because the action, the battles are really quick and fast, mm-hmm. and they give you really good incentives for actually playing smart. Like, you know, remember in Persona 4 how, you know, if you use your weakness... or an enemy's weakness against them, you get an extra turn. Was that a thing in Persona 4?
Yeah, it's not really intelligence, it's just luck, though, for the most part.
Okay, well, basically, they basically incentivize you to, you know, use the right spells and attack, you know, and attacks, mm-hmm. and, you know, they'll even, like, give you sort of, like, a bonus health and... an MP boost if everybody manages to, like, hit an enemy with a critical attack or something that would affect them more negatively than a regular attack. So, yeah, I mean, they basically, they make what a lot of people think about, they make things that people don't think are fun about JRPGs fun again. And they really do a good job, and the story seems interesting so far.
Awesome, that's great, dude.
Yeah, I mean, it is so far. It seems more about the adventure than character development necessarily. But I like who I'm hanging out with so far. So
yeah.
I know Persona is more about forging relationships with other people, and that's what's like big main hook. So
absolutely,
it's different, but it's you know. It's actually, Kelly, you played Shin Megami Tensei 2. So.
Oh, that was rad. It's rad as hell.
Yeah. Eric, have you played any of the Shin Megami Tensei games at all?
Nope.
Are you a big JRPG fan or RPG fan?
I've dabbled in them. Like, I'm a huge fan of Chrono Trigger. I love Chrono Trigger.
Oh,
absolutely. All the endings and shit. But, yeah, there's a few other played here and there, but for the most part, no, they're not what I typically go for.
Uh-huh. Yeah, me either. I mean, I played,
Me either.
Sorry to interrupt you, Kelly.
I interrupted you.
But the most recent JRPG that I've been playing, I don't even know if this counts, but Fire Emblem Awakening.
Oh, nice! I was playing that too.
I have had a lot of fun with that game, but I'm at this part now where I may be stuck and I may have to start over, and it sucks because I'm really loving the game and it's just sort of frustrating because there's only 2 levels of difficulty. And this is my first like Fire Emblem game ever, and so I'm a total like noob or whatever, and I just like I don't know. I'm sort of at this part where I don't know. I may be stuck, and it sucks. It really sucks because I really am loving the game, and not just the gameplay, but the story too, and the characters, and how sort of similar to Persona, you can create. Bonds between your different characters, and that affects the overall gameplay, which is really great.
Yeah, can certain people in that new Fire Emblem sort of get together and maybe even have a kid that down the line will become a new member of the party?
Oh, wow. If they could do... I did not hear about that, but if you can, that'd be awesome.
I think that might be one of the hooks. I think that actually that's what they did in one of the earlier Fire Emblems, in the fourth one, I think, where it took place over several generations, and and it really actually depended who hooked up with who.
Oh.
That sounds so nefarious.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm gonna
like, okay, you must breed with this one to create the super citizen that will fight for me.
Yeah. But, you know, they have to like each other first. Otherwise, it won't happen. That'd be a horrible option, sort of, if you...
That's what they say when they breed dogs. It's like, well, they have to like each other, I guess, somewhat. But let's just, you know...
You're comparing... Kelly, did you just compare the Fire Emblem characters to dogs?
No, I'm comparing you to dog breeders.
Dog, I mean, Fire Emblem is the best dog simulator game, so...
Oh my gosh.
Speaking of which, did you guys see that Sony's coming out with their own Nintendogs for the Vita?
No,
really?
I'm not surprised at all.
Oh, that sounds awesome, because you can actually pet them, right?
That's true, yeah. It was like, holy shit, this looks...
Guy, stylus. Sorry.
That's okay. It looks exactly like Nintendogs, like, to a criminal T. It was like, oh, wow, you guys straight up didn't even try, did you?
I can't wait. Well, I mean, they did the same thing.
Is it called Sone Dogs?
It's something like PlayStation Pets. And I was like, oh, you didn't even do something like quirky with the name.
It's the same thing with, what was it? PlayStation All-Stars Battle Royale. That was a blatant Smash Brothers ripoff.
So, yeah.
And it wasn't good either, so a lot of people were not big fans of that game.
I liked it when I played it at PAX. I played at PAX Prime last year. I liked when I played. Yeah, I was really worried that it would feel too similar to Brawl and all that junk. But I remember playing it actually, thinking it felt pretty dead. Have you played it?
I played a little bit of it, and I was just not a fan of it personally.
We played like a bunch of matches because they had so many stations and the line was so short, and the objective is totally different in that game. Like, whereas Brawl, like, Smash Bros., the objective is to push the person outside the ring, and that's it. You want to just make them weaker, and push them outside. Like, that, it's like a push, like almost like a sumo wrestling kind of thing, I guess you could say, compared to. But with that, the whole point is you're just trying to build up your meter. So literally, it's just, you don't have to worry about that. You are literally just trying to get as many hits as you possibly can while trying to avoid getting hit yourself. And that's the whole objective of that game. So I think in terms of that, it is totally different. And yeah, like, I mean, when you look at the game, yeah, obviously it looks just like fucking Smash Bros. But I feel like if you really play it and, like, spend time and concentrate, like...
Sure.
I feel like it feels totally different than Smash Bros.
Sure.
And that was one of those games that I was like, I don't need one. I mean, I played it a bunch at Prime. That's because I was there with a million friends. So obviously that was tons of fun. But, that was a game that I was like, yeah, a bunch of people play it, I'll get it, but I don't need to own that. And I was, like, ready to buy it because, like, I thought it was fun with friends. And, yeah, no one else got it, so I never got it.
I think my main complaint with that game was their roster. They could have gone so nuts, but they didn't. I know the last boss is actually really cool because it's, like, Polygon Man. I don't know if you guys know about Polygon Man, but...
No.
He's, like, an original sort of mascot for the first PlayStation. You know, how many white guys do you need in a game like that? Like, you have two Coles and Drake, and I'm sure that guy from Killzone's probably a white dude, too.
Well, I mean, three-quarters of the protagonists of PlayStation exclusive franchises are white guys, I'm not saying that it's, like, a good thing. I'm not saying that there's not a diversity issue. I'm just saying that it makes sense that they would have these guys at the forefront, you know?
But that's the problem, though, is that they're strictly, like, tying the roster to either PS2 or PS3, where, yeah, the sort of the colorful diversity was not there. But during the PS1 era, there were so many, like, different crazy things that they came out for that were exclusive to PlayStation. It's kind of a shame. I mean,
Crash Bandicoot? Is he in the game?
No, he's not. And that's strictly a licensing problem, because I think, is it Vivendi?
Yeah,
Vivendi owns...
Universal, yeah. It's Vivendi and Universal, I think.
Yeah, so, you know, that's unfortunate. But, I mean, there are games like Jumping Flash and... what else was there? I'm trying to... I'm actually...
Bubsy 3D?
Yeah, Bubsy. Bubsy. I bought Bubsy 3D when I was a kid. Oof.
Oh, God.
That was weird.
I pity your poor soul.
But, you know, there was a lot of stuff, and it was just a shame. In fact, actually, we saw... Kelly, well,
Kelly's a huge fan of Legend of Dragoon, and they were originally going to put the main character of Legend of Dragoon there. They even had, like, a page that showed the character model, and we were just like, Jesus Christ, man, like, damn.
I remember I was on the way to Max's house, and he sent me a text message that was like, wait, I can't wait till you get there, we get here, I have news. It's disappointing, but it's kind of cool at the same time. And I was thinking to myself, what the hell could this possibly be? And I thought it was something, like, personal, like, something to do with one of our friends or, you know, Max's family. And I was like, what could be disappointing and cool at the same time? And then when I got – we went to his room, and he had the site on his computer. And he just showed it to me. And
you had this look of, like – you didn't say anything. You were just frozen there for a second, like, yeah. No.
Legend Dragoon is the best RPG ever created.
That's debatable. But
you know what's funny? A lot of people will probably fight with you on that. Well, I mean, fight for that.
I'm being facetious for the most part.
Me too. I've never heard of Legend of Dragoon.
Oh, dude. You need to play it.
What system is it on?
PlayStation.
PlayStation 1?
Yes.
Is it on PS3, PS1 Classics?
Yes, it is.
It actually is.
It's $5. It has some really cool mechanics. I'm surprised they didn't... just, like, small things that they've never brought back for any other RPGs. Like, when you choose to defend, you actually regain a little bit of health.
Hmm.
I was like, oh, that's cool. Yeah. That actually incentivizes defending a little more. Because I always felt like the option to defend was... in a lot of JRPGs, kind of worthless. Because, I mean, it's like you could spend a turn, say, charging up something or just attacking. But,
and it's balanced very well, too, because you end up defending a lot because you can only hold 32 items at any time, including multiples. So, like, if you have...
It's not like Final Fantasy where you can hold, like...
99
huge amounts,
everything.
Yeah, exactly.
It's more old school Final Fantasy where it was like that.
Oh yeah, like 2 or 3 or 4.
Yeah. So you have 3 characters in your party. If you have 5 healing potions, that's 5 of your slots right there, just healing. And then there's all the other items that you can have, and there's consumable items that other RPGs have where you cast, like, a fire spell, and you have to mash the X button, and it gets bigger and bigger the more times you smash, you're able to smash the X button.
I thought that was cool, too.
Yeah, but my favorite thing, and the thing that I miss from, like, all other RPGs that I've played after, because that was the first, grand-scale RPG, and even then, it was very linear, but... the addition system, where when you attack physically, you have to it's like a combo system where you have to press a button at the right time and if you press it at the right time, they'll follow it up with another hit, and then you have to press it the right time then. And when you first start off with an addition that you only have to hit the button once. And then the character finishes it. Mm-hmm. But by the end, you have additions that are like 7, 8 moves long, and you have to tap the button at the right time. So there's a certain element of rhythm involved in the game that is really cool. That I like.
Nice.
And they all have fun names, full voice acting. So they say the name of their addition or their magic spells after they cast it. It's really cheesy and awesome.
Very cool. I'll definitely try and check it out if I can.
Look at the dog.
Oh, God.
Look at the dog.
this is from the PlayStation Pets. Oh,
yeah, look at that.
The dog.
The dog's in a hippo suit.
He looks like he's saying, hey, look at me. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
That's
Nintendo
great.
Can't touch this. Come on. That's what he's saying.
Well, that's going to be the photo I use for the podcast this week. Legend of Dragoon definitely sounds like a very interesting game. Ugh. But, I guess, you know, it's been an hour and a half, so I think, you know, maybe we can keep this a little short and sweet
podcast. All right, I can talk today. About movies?
Yeah, I was about to say, before we wrap it up, everyone can give their recommendation for a TV show or movie that they would recommend that all the lovely viewers go out and watch. Eric, would you like to go first?
Yes, I would. I'm sorry, I'm looking at what movies I watched lately.
Okay.
I forget, I like make a list of them.
Okay.
Yeah, you know what? Screw it. I'm gonna throw out a controversial one. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
I suggest the Evil Dead remake.
That
check
was awesome.
I like, yeah, I liked
that was
it.
Really good.
I just saw it recently and I liked it a lot. I thought that was pretty solid. I mean, it wasn't without a few flaws, I'll admit, but
yeah.
I thought it was for the most part, that was a great A. That just took the idea of the original and went above and beyond. It was. It was, like, you could definitely tell that, like, that was just, like, years of frustration from Rami and Bruce Campbell of, like, yeah, this is what we wanted to do, like, back in 1981, but couldn't because of the budget. Now it's just
sure.
Like, yep, now we have all this money, let's just go fucking buck wild.
Yeah, to be fair, I'll say this. I've seen Evil Dead 2 and Army of Darkness, and Evil Dead 2 is essentially a remake of 1.
A very loose
remake of 1. But I'm a big fan of the franchise, those movies. Was not very happy that they were remaking it, but my thing with remakes that keeps me from getting angry about it, like a lot of people are sort of like upset about the fact that Spike Lee was the guy who remade Old Boy.
And
I don't know, that movie could be good, it could be bad, who knows, it's not coming out yet until October or November. But with the Evil Dead remake, it just sort of, like, for me anyway, it just didn't seem like it was bringing anything new to the table in terms of horror. But in terms of, like, taking the material and doing something new and interesting with it, because from the trailers that I saw, it seemed a lot like torture porn in a way. And I just sort of, that turned me off because the Evil Dead movies are not torture porn. And it just... the style of the movie just sort of turned me off, and I mean, I've heard mixed things. I've heard some people that really like it, some people that don't, but it's just that type of horror for me is just not my thing, and I'm probably not going to ever check it out because of that, but it's interesting to hear it from a different perspective.
I think you should see it from a technical perspective, because there was, I think, maybe aside from some lighting effects, there was no CG in that movie.
Really?
And when you see some of the things they do, it's like, how did they not use CG for this? I think they studied a lot of magic tricks or something.
Well, I mean, they probably would study a lot of old-school horror, probably movies like The Thing, or even probably the older Evil Dead movies, I'm sure. I've heard that there's a lot of homages to the other Evil Dead movies.
For sure.
There's definitely hints that they're trying to like make it that like this could be a remake, or this could be could be something that we're setting like within the same universe. It takes place like years after like the original movies, just within the sort of the same cabin.
Yeah, the plan you bring that up. The plan that Sam Raimi has said is that he wants to do an actual Evil Dead 4, and then do the sequel for the remake of Evil Dead would be the crossover between the. That Evil Dead universe, and then the Ash Williams Evil Dead universe. So, if they actually do that, that would be really interesting.
I felt like that was the vibe I got from like the little after credits thing. In the
Yeah. For, spoiler alert, but for anyone that hasn't seen the movie, after the credits, there's a little scene where Ash Williams, played by Bruce Campbell, from the original trilogy, looks at the camera and says "groovy" in you know his traditional style, and that's it. So it sort of implies that I don't know that there may be the next Evil Dead movie could be at least in this branching off remake franchise could involve Ash, which would be really cool because I think Bruce Campbell is definitely wants to play that role maybe one more time, hopefully. but who knows?
Yeah, we'll see.
We'll see. But, yeah, so Evil Dead, you'd recommend it?
Yeah, I'd recommend it. Although, when you're talking about genre definitions earlier, I feel like I hear torture porn being thrown out around too much. What I really, really define that is, like, Splatterhouse. Like, that was totally just, like, gonzo, like, balls-to-the-wall gore.
Yeah, but I don't think that is necessarily torture porn. I think stuff like Saw, Hostel...
Yeah, yeah, that's...
That's torture porn.
I mean, at least the Saw, later Saw movies. I still consider, like, the first one a really good, solid
first
film.
Saw, the first Saw is, for what it is, it's a good movie.
But, the later ones definitely became...
I think 2 and on just sort of devolve into this ridiculous stupidity, but... Yeah, I think Saw, Hostel, the Human Centipede movies, they're all torture porn. They're all stupid and pointless and just meant to excite the audience by showing characters getting killed and tortured and all that. And it's not my type of horror. And I'm glad that it's sort of dying down and you're having more things like the Evil Dead remake, like The Conjuring, which I don't know if anyone has seen.
Oh, I saw that too, like, a little while ago. Did you see that?
I've not seen it, but I've heard really good things. I mean, it's gotten some pretty good reviews, and I heard it's a very old-school type horror film, which I appreciate.
It was all right. I'm pretty iffy when it comes to ghost stories, just because I'm not much of a believer.
Yeah, so me too.
Like, a ghost story, it has to be, like, really good for me to, like, really like it, and that one I just thought was, like, all right. If you want to recommend... If you want a recommendation for a good ghost story, I'd recommend Ty West's Innkeepers. That was one that I really liked.
I was just about to ask you guys if you saw either The House of the Devil or Innkeepers, because, those are really good. Those are, like, not shock horror. It is, like, actually, Rob, you probably like them, because they're more psychological horror.
Yeah, that's totally, like, atmosphere, like, slow build, like, letting you just soak in the environment. Like,
yeah.
That's like, totally what those movies are about.
Yeah, like, I'm a big fan of, like, Psycho, the first Psycho, anyway, and the original Psycho, not the remake that had Vince Vaughn playing Norman Bates, which is just the most hilarious miscasting I think I've ever seen in a movie. It's every line of dialogue he speaks is, you imagine Anthony Perkins in the same role, just doing it 10 times better, and it's just... Someone did a comparison on YouTube of the same shot, of the same scene from the original Psycho and the 98 remake, and just the original Psycho just blows it out of the water, and the reason why is, A, because the actors are 10 times better, because the direction is so much better, because they take more pauses. Everything is a little bit not as forced sounding. It's a bit more natural. And this is 1960. You figure in 98... You know, naturalistic dialogue would be like, you know, in a movie, you know, would be pretty, you know, well pat, but it's just every line of dialogue in Psycho, in the remake of Psycho, because it's a shot for shot remake. Literally, exactly shot for shot, as best as they could, and it just failed horribly. Gus Van Sant, he's a great director, but I don't know what he was thinking when he decided to do a remake of Psycho shot for shot. I mean, I could think of 100 different actors he could have chosen to cast Norman Bates as. Vince Vaughn would not be on that list. but yeah, I mean, I definitely will check out those movies you recommended, absolutely.
Yes.
I think psychological horror is definitely a type of horror genre that is definitely the one that's harder to do.
Yeah,
but when you pull it off, it's 10 times better than any other type of horror film, in my opinion.
Yeah, Ty West definitely goes for the slow and steady approach to, like, the final build. Mm-hmm. He definitely, like, knows how to do it. I was way more impressed with Innkeepers than House of the Devil, personally. But House of the Devil is made like a 1970s movie, and, like, it definitely looks just like a 1970s movie, and it was only made in, like, 2009. So I think technically that movie, like, just looks better the way it was made and what it was going for, but Innkeepers is also really impressive. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're both checking out totally. Yeah.
I'm not sure about Innkeepers, but I know for House of the Devil, he actually used film stock for that one. Like, he didn't shoot it digitally.
Oh, that's
like,
cool.
Wow. Yeah.
35 millimeter?
Maybe, I guess. I'm not as... I just know...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. It looks like it could be pretty old, but I think Innkeepers definitely felt like HD and like they mm-hmm. at the more modern day. But House of the Devil was I was impressed with how old they made it look.
That's cool.
Yeah.
But all right, so yeah.
Oh, I have one thing to recommend to all of you.
Okay.
So all right. So cool. Have you guys ever heard of Vice?
Yes.
Yep. Okay. So Vice.
Do you want to explain though what Vice is to anyone that doesn't know about Vice?
So Vice does documentaries. Now I haven't seen all of what Vice does, but I know of their documentaries where they go to some of the most horrible places to be on the planet.
Or I think I have seen a couple of Vice documentaries where they discuss like taboo topics. Like they did a really good one on 3D printing of guns.
Oh, really? I got to see that.
Yeah.
That's cool. So they do a variety of stuff. But there was so they did a documentary about a few years back with Shane Smith. He and his, I guess, cameraman, they go to North Korea. And that was really good. That was very, very good. I'd recommend everybody see that. However, just recently, they went back to North Korea. Shane Smith can't legally go back to North Korea anymore, but someone else from Vice did. And this is the best part. He went with 3 Harlem Globetrotters and Dennis Rodman.
Okay, now is this okay? Now I remember Dennis Rodman talking about he had talked with Kim Jong Un.
Yes.
Is this how he got in contact with him by going with Vice?
It is incredible. Like I don't know if you guys know, but Harlem Globetrotters had a cartoon back in the 80s.
They did.
This is like the closest we'll ever get to seeing one of those episodes becoming real, because it's just like, what the fuck are you guys doing here? And I know it's because, you know, Kim Jong-un loves basketball. And so he brought three Harlem Globetrotters and Dennis Rodman, and Dennis Rodman got to sit next to Kim Jong-un during this basketball game. Where the Harlem Globetrotters took on some of the best basketball players in North Korea. It's so weird. But, I mean, like, by the end of the second documentary, it's only 30 minutes long, Kim Jong-un is, they're having dinner with him. Like, the people mm-hmm. from Vice and the Harlem Globetrotters and Dennis Rodman. And it's like, it gets to the point where, Kim Jong-un goes, I hope this sort of, like, you know, we sort of see eye to eye on certain things in North Korea. I was just like, wait, is this the most diplomacy we've had with North Korea in like decades? Like this is insane.
Well, I think Dennis Rodman talked after his trip. I remember he talked to media saying like they were certain things like he wanted like to be eye to eye. Like he said to Barack Obama, like, hey, give him a call, you know. That's literally what he said.
I my friend was telling me, apparently Dennis Rodman was like, look, okay, Obama can't do shit. I gotta do something about this.
I'm not surprised. I mean, he has a huge fucking ego.
Oh,
ever since he played for the Bulls.
Exactly. Yeah, he was, I guess that's what one thing Kim Jong-un really likes is he loves the Chicago Bulls. Like, he thinks they're amazing, so.
And it's not like Michael Jordan's gonna go to North Korea, so Dennis Rodman is the next best thing, I guess.
Yeah. And that's why there probably will be a movie about this in 10 years or so, or within the next 10 years, because it is so insane. But yeah, you guys should see it, because it is, like, it's hilarious.
Yeah.
It is really crazy.
I would not be surprised, considering the crazy shit that's been put to film before.
Yes.
But yeah, but thank you, Max, for your recommendation. Kelly, what TV show or movie would you recommend this week?
I'll recommend a TV show since we've been talking about movies, and I haven't seen a movie since last time we casted. So, I'm gonna recommend RuPaul's Drag Race. It's a reality television show.
I've heard of that. I know I've heard of it.
I've heard of it as well. I've seen an episode on The Soup.
Oh, really? It's the greatest reality TV show, which I know doesn't sound like that's not saying much, but I think it's the best reality TV show. It's funny. It's fascinating, and it's really opened my eyes on a lot of issues and art and like different forms of art that I've been always sort of aware of drag, but I didn't know the history and the effort and all the different types of art that goes into it, and it's just been it's really enlightening.
Uh-huh.
It is incredibly cheesy, over the top, campy, like reality, yeah. but like it's drag queens, so yeah. They kind of go hand in hand,
exactly.
Which is why it works. I've seen like two episodes of America's Next Top Model, and
oh god.
Yeah, exactly. Because there was a marathon on, and I was like, oh, this is, like, something kind of sort of similar, but I was just like, this is not compared to Drag Race at all.
Doesn't have the charm or the...
It really doesn't. It's like, these girls are just, like, just getting, like, first of all, Tyra Banks, I'm not really a fan of her in general.
Me either.
For whatever reason, I can't really pinpoint it.
I can pinpoint exactly why it's like Tyra Banks, and that's because she is not a very intelligent person.
Well, but anyway, maybe that's just the way she presents herself. Maybe not. But in that show, it's just women basically, like, trying to pose the best, and they give them these challenges, but for the episodes I've seen, it didn't seem like they had much, like, control or agency over what they were doing. Like, from what I could tell, they were given their own costumes and makeup, and it was just, I was totally disinterested in the whole thing. But in this show... The challenges are so different from one to the next. Like, in one challenge, like, they have to... I'm talking about Drag Race now. They have to make their own costume, handmade, like, from scratch. And other ones, they have to, act. Sometimes they have to sing. The actual things that do require talent, mm-hmm. You know. So someone gets eliminated every episode. So, mm-hmm. It's similar to most reality TV shows like that, and like the winner gets a cash prize and lifetime supply of makeup.
Of course.
Yeah. So the way that someone's eliminated every episode. At the end, the bottom two have to perform a lip sync, like head to head. A song plays, and obviously there's no singing talent involved. It's just pure theatrics, like just lips. It looks so exhausting.
Yeah.
And then RuPaul picks the person to stay and the person that goes home,
yep.
And it's just. Human drama at its court.
Human drama is dictated by reality TV show and editing, but yeah, human drama.
Well, yeah, obviously, it's real, but it's obviously edited to make it more...
More dramatic, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, you could tell they don't actually hate each other as much as...
Of course.
Yeah, and... Yeah, there's some sweet, tender moments where, like, they talk about how, like, growing up being gay and things like that, too. So there's some, and that in between, like, the joking and the everything else. I think on Giant Bomb, there was a podcast where they brought it up. I think Alex Navarro is a fan of the show. I think he mentioned it. He was awesome. Like, yeah, this show is awesome.
Oh, yeah, I remember that one.
Yeah, I was like, wow, Alex, I got newfound respect for you.
Well, I mean, I have some transgender, some gay, some lesbian friends, who are a couple of them are drag queens, and that whole subculture is just really fascinating to me because I think it's very courageous in a way to, but I also think could also be very. It's just interesting to just go out into the world as a different person, really, your alter ego in a way.
It takes a lot of nerve.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think a lot of those, guys and technically gals who dress up as guys, I guess too. That would be another form of drag, right? Or is that a different word for it?
That's still drag. Okay. Maybe some people call it like reverse drag or something, but I think that's debatable. Like. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just think it's just very interesting that whole subculture and everything. I just find it so fascinating, and it's cool that we live in a world today that can make a TV show about it.
It's from season one until season five. It's amazing, like the production, how much the production costs went up, and how much of a hit this show has become.
Yeah, definitely.
Seasons 2 and 4 are my favorites. Mm. So if you're interested in starting out with a curiosity, maybe.
Cool. And I'll definitely say, Kelly, if you haven't seen it before, definitely check out the documentary Paris is Burning.
Yes, I've been meaning to watch that because they mention it in a lot of episodes. And I'm just like, and I had a question on a final exam based off a clip from that movie.
Really?
Yeah. In one of my classes at college. Because it was a cultural studies class, and we talked about gender at some point.
Uh-huh.
And my professor, showed us a clip, and there was a I forgot what the question was, but it was, like, frame using this clip as an example to explain this. And
cool.
This.
Yeah, I mean, Paris is Burning is just such a amazing documentary because it came out, I think, 89, came out the late 80s, and it just explored the subculture that really, in terms of mainstream cinema, and I consider Paris is Burning a mainstream documentary because I think it got nominated for an Oscar, or I think it maybe won the Oscar, I'm not sure, but it really opened a lot of eyes to people about this whole subculture of transgender, gay, lesbian, drag community. And yeah, I think it changed a lot how the public perceived, those type of people,
Mm-hmm.
It was a very influential documentary. And I definitely recommend, if you love RuPaul's Drag Race, definitely check out Paris is Burning.
Reading is fundamental.
Absolutely. But, yeah, so thank you, Kelly, for your enlightening recommendation. Most people on a podcast probably wouldn't recommend a show like that, or to be perfectly honest.
I try to branch out a little bit.
Yeah, Bollywood, Drag Race, reality shows.
Now I just need to find something that combines the two.
I'm sure it's out there.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But, my recommendation this week is also a TV show, and it is the show Breaking Bad on AMC.
I've never heard of that. Could you talk about that a little bit?
For those who aren't familiar with Breaking Bad, and if you aren't, then you're probably living under a rock, because I think the most recent episode had like 6 million viewers or something, like 5.5 million, which is like the highest ever for the show. I think the pilot had like 1.2 million, and that's like 2008, and then like, yeah. So it's, it's basically doubled almost every year its pilot ratings. But Breaking Bad is, the basic premise is, this guy named Walter White, who's a chemistry teacher, he has a really hot wife named Skyler, It's his son.
Sorry.
Hey, a lot of people hate that character, but Skylar's one of my favorite characters from the show.
Okay, that makes me so happy that you say that.
I like her, too. I feel bad for her.
Eric, do you watch the show?
No, I don't. I've never seen an episode.
Well, Eric, this is perfect for you, then. So basically, like I said, Walter White, chemistry teacher, wife named Skylar, son Walt Jr., and basically he washes cars as well, and they live in this very stereotypical suburban middle class part of Albuquerque, New Mexico, and he has a brother-in-law named Hank, who's a DEA agent, and during his 50th birthday party, Walter White comes home after finding out that he has terminal lung cancer, and I think, he comes home, surprise birthday party, and basically the plot of the pilot is him teaming up with his former student, now a meth dealer named Jesse Pinkman, to cook the most pure and stable product, as Walter describes it, of crystal meth, and so he can have enough money to leave for his family before he dies. And that is $737,000, as Walt figures out. And throughout the course of the series, basically, it's him and Jesse getting deeper and deeper into the drug trade, and how Walt basically devolves, as Vince Gilligan puts, from this really likable, happy, you know, relatable guy to, like, an almost Scarface-type character by the later seasons, which definitely it has turned out by the premiere of the last 8 episodes. And it's an amazing show. It has changed and influenced so many shows that are on right now. And the cinematography is amazing. The editing is fantastic. The performances, I mean, especially Bryan Cranston, Anna Gunn in the later seasons once the writers knew what to do with her. Dean Morris now, once the writers gave him a lot more better material. Just all fantastic. Bob Odenkirk plays a lawyer named Saul Goodman from season 2 on. A lot of people probably know him from Mr. Show, which is also a great show. But yeah, I think I've described Breaking Bad basically as not a TV show, but it is basically a 50-plus hour movie. That's what it feels like to me. It does not feel like normal television. It really does feel like a 50-plus part movie, and that's what's so incredible about it. And just from the opening shot all the way up to the end of the latest episode of the second half of season 5, just everything about that show is just fantastic. With the occasional slip up here and there, but it's really all in the earlier 2 seasons. From season 3 on, the show is basically flawless, in my opinion. So
I love that show too.
That's my recommendation. Go watch Breaking Bad on Netflix if you haven't. All 4.5 seasons are now up.
Oh, they are? Okay.
So I would say to people like Eric who have not watched the show, definitely, if you can, definitely go watch it, because just like Walter White's 99% pure crystal meth, it is a very, very addicting show once you get a hold of it.
Next time,
for some of us,
Netflix account is active. Oh, why did you not find it addicting?
It's good. It's just not like. I'm not going to dispute that it's a great show.
Oh.
It's just not my particular cup of tea. Like, I really had to sort of.
Yeah.
I really had to, like. Rocco, I share, my opinion is very similar to Rocco's, but, so, It's more like I had to force my way through it, especially...
Rocco
like,
of Mega 64.
Yeah, sorry. I talk about him like he's, like, you know, everyone knows who he is. Mm-hmm. But...
Like he's fucking Mr. Rogers.
But I just found it, for the most part, to just be boring with, like, a really awesome scene, at the end or at the beginning. And mm-hmm. then, like, I just sort of, like, found myself...
Slow burn,
yeah. But, I mean, that's not necessarily a bad thing. I think I just... I don't like really, like, depressing, really gritty things.
Uh-huh.
I think, like, first of all, so... That's just a personal preference, I think.
Yeah.
You know, so...
Yeah.
I was just sort of sad and bored throughout most of the, like... Definitely season... what was it? What was the... Season 4 was the one with the laundromat
yes.
whole thing deal, well, right?
That was the one with... Yes, that's basically
yeah.
the big
that's,
season.
That was definitely the most... I really like season 2 a lot, actually, but season 4 was just, like, the best example of the, okay, slow burn, okay, yeah, and then, like, the last two episodes, just, like, how is this gonna end? Oh, like, I'm kind of curious, I guess I'll keep watching. To be fair, I don't really remember that series particularly well,
mm-hmm.
and I mean, that just shows you that, like... For me in particular, I only remember certain scenes and the rest is just, whatever. But,
mm-hmm.
I said, just...
Not for you.
Just to provide another view. But
sure.
Not really, it's just sort of like, I recognize that this is an amazing show, but, yeah, it just...
It's good to have multiple
upsets,
views on this.
It upsets me.
It upsets you.
Yeah.
Well, I think, to be fair, I think... It's supposed
also,
to be upsetting, you know?
It's true, but then I think on a if I could take this into, it's like a, I don't know if you could call it like a meta level, but
mm-hmm.
it upsets me the way everyone seems to be rooting for this guy, and I hate him, and I want him to fail, and I feel like I'm watching it wrong, because I like Skylar, and I feel really bad for her, and I think Walt is a psychopath, and like, if the series ends with him... dying, or I would be thrilled. Like,
You know, to be perfectly honest, I 100% agree. I think in the beginning, Walt starts out definitely, you sort of want him to make enough money so that he can leave it for his family. But I think by the end of season 2, and I don't want to spoil it because it's a big moment, but by the end of season 2, he just sort of becomes very unlikable. And very manipulative.
Oh, that yeah, that was definitely... I know what you're talking about now.
And
yeah, that was awful. Oh, my God.
And, yeah. And there's moments where he, like, sort of shows glimpses of his humanity. Like, there's a scene in season 4 with his son. That's probably one of my favorite scenes in the show. But other than that, it's just really... At this point, he is a very... unlikable character, and I just feel like the best ending for him would be like a Godfather 3 type ending, if you guys know what I'm talking about. You know? Have you guys seen Godfather 3?
I haven't seen any Godfather, actually.
No. Well, that's... Well, you get on that shit, then. Eric, do you know what I'm talking about with Godfather 3?
Nope.
You haven't seen Godfather 3?
No. Nope.
Have you seen any of the Godfathers?
No. Nope.
Oh, come on.
I'm sorry.
Oh.
You're talking to the three people in the world who have not seen The Godfather. Unless, Kelly, have you seen The Godfather?
No, I've only seen parts of it.
Well, at least you've seen parts of it. But basically, Godfather 3, I mean, for people who know what I'm talking about, I think a Godfather 3 type ending would be the best ending for him. I just feel like, I don't know. Eric, you haven't seen the show, so I don't want to spoil anything, but just, I have a lot of interesting theories on how the show could end, and hopefully, I don't know, they're different Maybe hopefully Vince Gilligan throws us all for a loop. I don't know. But, yeah. So Breaking Bad, definitely check it out. It's on Netflix. The first 4.5 seasons. The newest season is premiered on AMC on Sundays at 9. So, yeah. So Breaking Bad. But, yeah, I just want to say, Max, thank you once again for coming on.
Thanks again for having me. This was fun.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. And Kelly and Eric, thank you once again for coming on, as usual.
It was my pleasure.
Yeah. I have to keep this record going.
Yeah, that's right. You, like you said before, you've been on all three so far.
The only one.
The only one. You're basically a co-host at this point.
Oh.
But, yeah, I forgot to say this last week, but if anyone has any questions, comments, whatever, they want to talk, you know, their own recommendations, you can email the podcast at cellshockpodcast@gmail.com. That's cellshockpodcast@gmail.com, all one word. Definitely hit us up with some questions, comments, whatever. We'd love to hear your feedback. Artists out there, if you would like to send any artwork, I am really looking for artwork for the Gaming Cult Podcast Facebook page. Anyone has any artwork that they'd like?
Fan art,
exactly. Fan art, artwork, logos, anything like that. I'd totally be interested in stuff like that. Definitely send your drawings to cellshockpodcast@gmail.com as well. Yeah. So, guys, what would you like to pimp out before we go? What Twitters? Eric, I believe you have a Twitter. What is your Twitter?
Ricky Bear, twitter.com.
All right, so you have at Ricky Bear, Kelly and Max. I believe you also have Twitters.
Kelly Burke _.
And Max.
Max Farinato at Twitter.
And I believe you too.
Yeah, at Twitter.
Yeah, at Twitter. Yeah. So we have at Ricky Bear, at Kelly Burke with an _ at the end, and at Max Farinato. And I believe Max and Kelly, you have a certain podcast that I actually was a guest on at some point. Would you guys like to pimp that out?
I don't know what you're talking about. What?
I believe
Max, do we have a podcast?
We have a period of time where we talk like a bunch of jackasses. And then fall asleep.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We ate Turkish food that one time as well. Did you watch that, Rob?
Yes, I did watch the latest Gaiden.
What did
Game
you think
Cole
of
podcast
the video
special.
That?
I was a big fan of the opening. The first minute and a half was
thank
hilarious.
You. It was all me. That was my idea.
That was the that editing style was like right up my alley, Kelly.
That took so fucking long, you wouldn't have.
Well, that's my life right there. So.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
I'm editing, but man.
Yeah, it's a lot of work, but, you know. Yeah, it pays off once you get a great product like that. But,
yeah, you can hear us talk, me and Max and a couple of our friends from California, on the VG Bandits podcast. We're on YouTube right now. And we just do it for fun, basically. It's really... Those James and Matt and Gerard, we met at Game Days, Mega 64 Game Days at Disneyland, and we have been fairly close ever since. And the podcast is basically one of the few, we keep on contact, on Facebook and stuff, but, we actually come together and hang out with those guys on, on Skype, and the podcast is basically more for us just to catch up, and we decided to record it and actually put it up. So that's the sort of our origin story, I guess.
Wait, who'd you meet up with Game Days and do it with? I zoned out for 2 seconds. No, exactly, who was it?
These, these people called, their names are Matt, James, and Gerard. They're not, I don't think any of them are on, like, the Mega 60 forums, and they're not really, like,
okay.
Yeah, I don't think that, I don't know if you know them, but...
Oh, just from first names? No, I don't know. That doesn't ring a bell. Yeah, no, I just missed the names. I heard the rest of the story.
But what were we talking about? Oh yeah, so that's our podcast. And we recently, Max and I did an East Coast Gaiden, and we did a video podcast since we have that technology. Because we are actually, like, together, like, in the same state, and then we have
within 30, 40 minutes of each other.
Yeah, so we hang out and stuff, and I don't know, like, we've gotten pretty good feedback on that episode.
Yeah, definitely. It's a really funny episode. I love, Max, what did you think of Kelly's little voiceover?
Oh, it was so funny. Actually, I just
I didn't tell him about that until I put it up.
Yeah, I didn't know about it until I watched it on YouTube.
There was a, like, I knew that you wouldn't mind, but there was part of me that was just like, it would be super funny if Max just got incredibly offended at this and, like, stopped talking.
I should have just left a comment, yo, bitch. but no, yeah, I thought it was funny. Actually, I loved Kelly, I loved your intro, like the Yankee Doodle Dandy.
Yankee Doodle, which is the state song of Connecticut, in case you didn't know.
And also, the little flash of the GE logo, that was my favorite part. That was the best.
Absolutely. I mean, you guys put on a great podcast. It's hilarious. I love listening to it. I actually was a guest... for the 25th episode, I believe.
Yeah, I think that was our last, or was it our second?
Second to last.
Two, yeah. We need to do another one.
Yeah. I had a really great time. You guys were very, very nice, and it was great. It was a lot of fun.
Not to
Max. With you guys, of course. I think, Max, you didn't show up to like halfway through that podcast.
Yes, which is, remember we made fun of him at the beginning?
That's right, yeah.
Especially you.
Yeah, I know. I was especially harsh.
Ruthless.
Yeah.
But James was like, James forced your hand.
True.
You were trying to be a nice guest, and then he was just like, bullshit.
True. I mean, once I've gotten to know you, Max, obviously you aren't, you know, any of those things I said.
Oh,
so.
Thank you, Rob.
But,
you're a very nice man yourself.
Well, thank you. But, enough of jerking each other off.
Whoa.
No, I'm not done yet.
No, okay. Alright, no. But, editing! No. But, yeah, you guys put on a great podcast, and definitely everyone should go check it out on YouTube and, yeah, at VG Bandits Cast, and you guys also have a VG Bandits Cast Twitter, I believe, right? Where you put out episodes and stuff like that.
Sort of. If you need to know exactly when a new episode goes up every 2 months, then the Twitter's there for you.
You know what the funny thing is, though? The person who pimps us out the most is Royce. Royce puts our shit up every week. I'm like, I want to do a shout-out to Royce, because...
Yeah, shout-out to Royce Kotami.
Royce Kotami.
Greatest Mega 64 fan in the world, and apparently greatest VG Bandits Cast fan in the world.
Apparently, yeah. Like, I don't know how... I feel like he doesn't sleep. I hope he's okay.
Well, he has a job with his dad, electrician job, so...
He's just a human machine that reads things on the internet, and when he reads...
Yeah, he should really work in...
Like, when he reads anything that's, like, affiliated with, like, Mega 64 or the fans, he just retweets it and Facebooks it, like, everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, he should really be, like, a PR person.
He really should.
He should work for Mega 64 at this point. I mean, he sort of does with the Royce's Choices, but I don't know. He really should, like, do something more, I guess, more related to their day-to-day activities.
Okay, that's the official message of this podcast we're going on. Like, Royce, get your shit together. Do more work.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But yeah, Royce is great. I think we can all say he is a great guy. We all love Royce. shout out to Royce. You can follow him on Twitter at Royce Kokami. He also goes by The Clean Freak. And I'm not even sure why, but that's
that
just...
was like his username on the forums back when people knew his name was even Royce at all.
Yeah.
Clean Freak. That's before Mega 64 didn't even know his name, his real name was Royce, they just said The Clean Freak recorded this, or The Clean Freak recorded that, so yeah, it just kind of became an agreement.
Yeah. Yeah. But Royce has done a great job. He's archived so much stuff. So much stuff. So many old podcasts. I think every podcast he's archived, a lot of the old miscellaneous videos, interviews they've done all the way back in 2003 and 2004, I think. It's really incredible, and I think every single Mega 64 fan, once they know about Royce and the work he's done, really, really come to appreciate him.
Definitely.
But enough about Royce. He needs to get his shit together, like we said.
Listen up, Royce. I think we need to have a Royce intervention cast next episode.
Yeah.
Royce, you're not doing enough.
Get Royce on here.
You're not doing enough.
Yeah. I'd love to have Royce on at some point.
We were trying to get Royce on our cast. I specifically was like, hey, Royce, you want to come on? But he was like, sorry, I don't play that many video games. I'm like, just come hang out.
Well, I guess we're officially in a tug of war then.
Yeah. Well, shit.
Well, we'll just, you know, we'll King Solomon this situation and cut him in half.
And on that note, ladies and gentlemen, we bid you a fond farewell to episode 3 of the Cell Shock podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you once again, Max, Kelly, and Eric for joining us. And hopefully episode 4, we are going to have a very, very special guest on. So look forward to that. And once again, everyone, thank you so much. And we're going to go out on one of the latest tracks by Ethan Avila, Independence. So once again, have a good afternoon, morning, whenever you're listening to this, night, whatever. Thank you so much, viewers, and see you next time.
9, ignition sequence start.